The final case for today is United States versus Abu Swash.
Pretty good.
Morning, Your Honors. Morning, we'll Counsel. May it please the Court, this is not a guidelines case. It's a lot more fun than a guidelines case. It's about the American dream of home ownership and double jeopardy. Mr. Abu Swash and his friend wanted to buy a house. In order to get a mortgage, they needed a credit history. They didn't have a credit history, so in effect, they faked it. They were charged, Mr. Abu Swash was charged with two counts of violation of what's called the bank fraud statute, section 18 U.S.C. section 1344, and three counts of another fraud statute, false statement to a financial institution, statute 18 U.S.C. 1014. Jury came back with convictions on both of the 1344 counts and two of the 1014 counts. Our first argument, Your Honor, is that one of the two 1344 counts has got to go. And I think the case law is pretty clear on this one, and the statute punishes a scheme. There was one scheme here, one application for a loan to buy one house dealing with one financial institution. Unless there are some questions about that argument, or unless I've really blown it, I'd like to talk about the more difficult, what I think is the more difficult issue, and that is the double jeopardy issue under the Section 1014 false statement statute.
Well, does it make any difference if it's remanded for resentencing?
Yes, it does.
Get the same sentence all over again.
Well, he served his sentence already. That's all. That's all done. He's got multiple convictions, and of course he's got to pay that $100 for every conviction. So his criminal history goes up, and I understand he's got some other legal problems. And if he winds up getting convicted on those, he's going to have these criminal history situations to deal with. So as a practical matter, very much so, I would say, Your Honor.
Well, explain that. I don't understand.
Well,
he's got a lot of problems.
Well, he's being prosecuted. He's being prosecuted for other offenses, Your Honor. I don't know what the situation is with those, but
in federal court.
Yes, Your Honor. And I'm trying not to say the guideline in words, but when they come around to calculating his guideline sentence, if he gets convicted on these other things.
In other words, the impact of this is more on how that might affect the future prosecution.
Sure. And it did have an impact on his sentence. Indeed, it did have an impact on his sentence because he got sentenced, I'm so trying not to say guidelines, above the guideline range. I believe because there were multiple convictions under these two statutes. The guideline range, and I promise I won't mention it again, was 0 to 6 months, and he got 8 months.
We still have guideline ranges. They're just advisory.
I understand, Your Honor. Our second argument, Your Honor.
Even if he had not served his sentence.
Pardon
even
me?
If he was waiting to start serving his sentence in this case.
Yes.
Because this is a sort of a sentencing package, the judge has a lot of accounts.
Right.
Here he had five counts. If the judge were to knock, or four, if he were to knock out one of the 1344 counts, as you suggest should be done, the judge could resentence so that he would still get, what was the bottom line, was 8 months, I believe?
He got 8 months.
So instead of getting 60 days on each of four counts, he could get
60 days on each of three.
Of almost 3 months per count, so he would come up with the same sentence.
Well, he could, but I think he'd have an awful time justifying that because he's got one less conviction he gives the same sentence on. And I'm gonna, anybody would come back up here and say, Your Honor, you know, he's got the same sentence for less.
No, but just
stuff.
So we get clear here, it is you're saying that he's already served this sentence.
I believe he has.
So is there any reason to send it back?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's got.
I mean, if the 1344 count, as you suggest, is duplicitous, we ought to dismiss it. Is there any reason to send it back for resentencing in light of that?
Yes.
What is the reason?
The reason would be that sentence was based on an assumption that there was a proper conviction that wasn't properly entered. There's one less crime that underlies that.
Would want him to go back and be resentenced to, if the judge would decide to put three 60-day sentences together.
Could. Or the judge could say, I understand now.
But he already served a sentence. What's the sense of doing all this stuff?
Why
all this rigmarole if he's already done this?
I don't think it's a rigmarole at all, Your Honor.
It is. He's already done his time. I didn't know he'd already done his
time. I think he's already done his time.
What if we?
Well, that's a good point. You think he?
I don't know if this.
What if we just vacated that conviction? Would that put you where you want to be?
Well, that's one conviction that needs to be vacated. But I think the 1014s have to go also.
So what you're asking is to vacate all the convictions?
I think one can stay, and that's one of the 1344s. Or the government can elect to do two 1014s and lose both 1344s. This is like bingo. And let me tell you why that is. Because everything that could possibly be covered in 1014 is already covered in 1344. And the hypothesis is it's a lesser included offense. 1014 offenses are lesser included offenses of 13.
No, there's a scheme to defraud involved in one and not in the other.
Correct. And a scheme is bigger than intent. 1344 says you've got to have a scheme. And the jury instructions say scheme means intent and something else. Whatever that is, it's not clear to me. But we know that a scheme requires at least intent. Okay?
Don't you have to have the same elements, though, if you're talking about lesser included offense?
You have to have all of the elements in the lesser included offense included in the bigger statute.
Well, that isn't the case here, is it?
Yes, it is. And I believe it absolutely is, Your Honor. And I made myself a little chart, if that's helpful. I went right down to it. Knowledge, one requires knowledge. Intent requires intent. 1344 requires a scheme, which is your jury instructions, say a course of action plus intent. 1014 requires intent. It's exactly this. Everything that's covered in 1014 is subsumed in 1344.
Well, that's not the way I read the statute. Go ahead.
Well, I think the analytical tool here is called set theory. You know, where you draw little circles, and sometimes the circles intersect, and sometimes they don't. I made a chart. And there's nothing I was able to come up with anyway that is listed in 1014 that isn't subsumed within 1344. So I'm pretty confident, with the possible exception of this, and I have to be candid with you on this. I haven't found a case on it, but I have to be candid with you. The financial institution part of it. The financial institution of that's covered by 1344, that's defined over in 18 U.S.C. section 20, I think. And then there's another list of financial institutions, 1014. My read of them, they're the same thing. I can't find any case that says they're not the same thing, and nobody's argued that they're not the same thing, or at least that 1014 isn't smaller. But that's the only possible exception that I... And it's out of candor that I tell you about it because I don't think it applies. Down the line, right down the line, 1344 is either identical to or bigger than 1014. And that makes 1014 cases lesser included offenses, and lesser included offenses have to go away. So I think the bottom line is you get a 1344, or you dismiss the 1344 and you get two 1014s. That's, I think, the government's election. I'm not sure about that. I think so. And as a result, smaller criminal history, an opportunity for resentencing because the judge has fewer convictions to deal with. And so bottom line is we ask that these convictions be vacated and the sentence be vacated and the matter remanded.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Johnson.
May it please the court, my name is Mel Johnson. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney from Milwaukee, and I represent the government here. I'm prepared to essentially address all the points that are already addressed in my brief, but there may not be a lot of point to that because they're all, I think, fairly clear legal points with which we're all familiar. But if you want to ask me any questions about those, I'd be happy to address them, but I think my time might be better spent addressing a few points which were raised during Mr. Schwing's argument. First of all, with regard to Mr. Abu Shawish's situation, as long as that came up, he is done with his sentence in this case. He has had two other convictions, both for larger frauds. One was a block grant fraud in the city of Milwaukee. The other was fraudulent activity in preparing false documents in order to get people into the country. And he got longer sentences in those, which he's presently serving. And also, he's not a citizen. The administrative proceedings for deportation are in process for him, and it is expected that once he finishes his other sentences, he will be deported. So I just wanted to clarify that. And I think that while it wasn't addressed in the briefs, I think that is significant only because, as pointed out, there was no objection to any of these counts on multiplicity grounds in the trial court, either at the time of trial or before trial or at sentencing or at any point. And under the clear error, or rather the plain error standards, which therefore apply, of course, it's difficult to find plain error. And even if this court does, this court has already held that that empowers the court to act but doesn't require the court to act. Now, I don't mean in any way to implicitly concede that there is any multiplicity here because we adhere to the position that there is no multiplicity. However, even if the court would disagree with that position, I would suggest that there's really no reason for the court to act here because it really does not make any practical difference to Mr. Abu Shawish. I'd also like to address the point which was raised about whether there are elements unique to the two different statutes. I disagree with my opponent's argument that there are no differing elements because I think, as you pointed out, Judge Cudahy, there are different elements in these two. Bank fraud under Section 1344 requires as elements a scheme to defraud and intent to defraud, neither of which are elements of false statements to federally insured banks under 1014. That 1014 requires as elements a false statement to the bank and intent to influence the bank, not necessarily to defraud the bank. So those are different elements. Contrary to Mr. Schwing's argument, these two statutes each require different elements, and under the prevailing test for multiplicity, that means they're not multiplicitous. I'd also like to bring up kind of a practical point, which I think proves by what happened at the trial here that these counts are not multiplicitous. You'll recall that Mr. Abu Shawish was found not guilty of count four. There were five counts in the indictment. He was convicted of four of them. Count four was another false statement count based on another allegedly false letter, which was referred to in the description of the scheme to defraud. Now, the jury, by finding him not guilty of that, was able to treat it as a separate act requiring separate consideration, and it was not just part of a unitary whole, which is the concern of multiplicity, and the same is true for all of these counts. And there's really no substantive difference between that count four and the other four counts of which Mr. Abu Shawish was convicted. Finally, I'd just like to emphasize, only because it was a bone of contention in the briefs, that Mr. Schwing has apparently conceded that the remedy here is not vacating all the convictions and dismissing the case for multiplicity. The remedy, and again, I don't mean to imply that there is any multiplicity, but if the court would find that there was and the court would choose to act, Mr. Schwing has conceded that the remedy is remand for resentencing on whatever counts are held not to be multiplicitous. So
you're saying that is correct or is incorrect, that remedy?
That is the remedy. That's the correct remedy.
You agree that that's the proper remedy. Is that right?
Yes, I'm agreeing that's the proper remedy. The brief, the defense briefs, without any analysis, simply asked for vacating all of the convictions and dismissing the case, which is not the proper remedy. So unless you have any questions, I think our position is quite clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I can do this in 20 seconds, Your Honor. There's a big difference between identical statutes and lesser-included statutes, and the government's arguing here because these two statutes are not identical that double jeopardy doesn't apply. Of course, they're not identical. The argument is one is a lesser-included offense of the other, and that's important and significant difference that has to be made. Thank you very much.
Mr. Schwing, you've taken this case by appointment, have you?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the court certainly appreciates your efforts on behalf of your client.
It's tough to come in at the end of the day and try to keep exhausted judges interested, Your Honor. Thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you. The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.